It might seem like there's a lot going on in our church. Maybe for some of us, it feels like there's a lot going on in our life. And I just want to let you know that I believe in our church. I believe in you. And most importantly, I believe in a good God who provides and makes a way even when things might seem uncertain. And I'm excited for the future because we call on that God, the same God of Jacob, Moses, Mary, and David. And if you're not excited for what's happening here at Cross City, I would just encourage you to get excited because we follow a good God and a big God, and he is in control. And I believe and trust that he knows exactly what he's doing. So whether you've been at Cross City for a while, maybe this is your first or second time, it doesn't matter. We're just so thankful that you're here. And like Darren said, I have a few moments to unpack some biblical truth. And I want to look at a story that might describe or explain how some of us are feeling, maybe in this moment as a church, or just in our current season of life. When things feel a little chaotic, when things feel a little out of control, what do? And there's always two options. We can choose unhealthy habits, we can seek out unwise counsel, we can do the wrong things, or we can do the correct things, the godly things. We can go to godly people and godly counsel, or we can go directly to the source, God himself. So my question is, where are the type A people in the room? Type A people, that's it? We only have like 7 of you? Okay, that's fine. Type A people, they know exactly what they're doing at all times. They like to plan. They're the people who, when they go on vacation, they have an itinerary. Like you say the word itinerary around a type A person and they're like, I got it. Let me see it. And these people plan so much when they go on a vacation. I mean, they typically need another vacation when they come home because they had everything planned to a T. Now for me, I am not type A, shocker, okay? I am married to a wonderful, beautiful, talented woman who is type A, who makes my life so much easier. She puts things in the calendar. I ask her a question. She tells me exactly what I need to know. Now, if you're not type A, you're a little more chill, a little more go with the flow. Where are my non-type A people in the room? Generally a little more exciting than type A, not gonna lie, that's okay. But what happens, whether you're type A or not, whether you go with the flow or you like to stick to your plan, what happens? Man, that phrase of you just roll with the punches. Well, what happens when the punches keep coming and you just cannot roll anymore? What do we do? People think that my wife and I are insane because we refuse to find out the gender of our babies before they're born. We have a 2-year-old son. His name's Judah. He's amazing. We did not know that he was going to be a boy when he was born. And we have another baby due on the 27th of this month, and we don't know the gender. And people come to us and are like, you're crazy. The thing about it is my wife is the planner. She's the type A person, and she came to me and said, I don't want to find out the gender. And I was really against it because I just really wanted to know. And after about 3 months, I let it go, and it was actually very, very exciting. But again, people just come up to me all the time and are like, how can you not figure out what you're having? How can you not know? It would drive me crazy. What do you buy the baby? I'm like, it's really not rocket science. You just find something that's a little neutral and we call it good, right? But there's some people, we just like to plan. We like to prepare. Other people, we don't so much. Maybe you're that type A person who likes to control things. But part of this experience of me not finding out the gender of my baby, it's actually taught me something very valuable. And it has taught me that it is okay not to know about something that's going to happen in the future. I don't have to know everything before it happens. I'm not a magic 8-ball. I'm not a crystal ball. I do not know the future, and that is fine. That is fine. And it might seem like a silly analogy equating knowing the gender of my children and comparing that to how God is in control. And through this process, I've actually learned to trust God in a more realistic way. I've learned to trust him differently because ultimately the baby will be born and God is still in control and he knows the plan and he knows the baby's gender and I'm going to trust his goodness always. And the thing about control is that sometimes we just convince ourselves that we have control and that we are in control, but that's not the reality, right? Because we all know deep down that God is in control. And what we have to do is we have to submit to his plan and his authority. And last week, we talked about how Jesus is our good shepherd and he speaks to his sheep. He speaks to us. And what we have to do is we have to listen to his voice so we know who to follow in any season of life, the good, the bad, the ugly, the high highs and the low lows, the mountaintops and the valleys. We have to trust that God knows best and he's always on the move because God is always working and moving even when things feel lost, broken, or out of control. And so today we're gonna look at a story that comes from our Bible where all seems lost. In fact, we're gonna look at a people group, an entire group of people who are stressed out because their plan didn't go according to their plan. They thought they knew what was going on. They had a plan in mind, but God actually had a different plan. And so they think their lives are ruined because they were trusting in the wrong person. But the thing about trusting in God is that he's actually never the wrong person to trust. And he always provides a way. He's provided a way 1,000 years ago. He provides a way today. And he will provide a way forevermore. And we have to believe that, church, no matter what is taking place around us. No matter the season of our life. So if you remember way back in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, that's our first book in our Bible, God chooses this guy by the name of Abram, right? He changes his name to Abraham. He says, Abraham, here's the deal. You are old and you have no kids. I am going to make your offspring my people. And Abraham is like, I'm old and I have no kids. How is that going to be possible? And God just said, all you have to do is trust me. And so Abraham trusts God. He has some children. He has a son named Isaac who has a son named Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons. One of them is Joseph. And what happens is through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all his sons and Joseph eventually he saves God's people from famine in Egypt. You know, Joseph is sold into slavery and he goes to Potiphar's house. He does all of these things and he works his way up in the ranks. And he's second in command, and he saves God's people. But in Exodus chapter 1, right after this amazing Joseph story that goes through Genesis 30 to Genesis 50, it says this in Exodus 1, verse 6. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king to whom Joseph meant nothing came to power in Egypt. He said, look, the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, they will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And so God's people are enslaved for hundreds of years. And then this little baby is born and his name is Moses. And it's a crazy story in Exodus. And Moses is born and he gets this opportunity to be raised in the king of Egypt's palace. But then he kind of does something wrong. He kills someone and his guilt and his shame overtake him and he leaves. He runs away from Egypt. He runs away from his people. He runs away from the palace. And if you know the story, some time goes on. And Moses has left and some years and years and years have gone by and he's tending some sheep and he has this miraculous interaction with a burning bush. And Moses is told by God in this bush God says to him, Moses, I need you to do me a favor. My people are enslaved, and I need you to go get them. I need you to go get God's people, and I need you to take them to the place that I promised Abraham and his descendants years and years ago. But the thing about Moses is that he's shy, he's timid, he's afraid, he has a stutter, he doesn't want to help. He's like, I don't know if I'm the right guy for the job. I don't know if I can do this. And God says, listen up, buddy. I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And so Moses teams up with Aaron. And then they go to Pharaoh 9 different times. And if you don't free God's people, if you don't give back to God what belongs to him, his people, bad things are going to happen. And 9 times, what happens? Pharaoh says no. And it's 9 plagues, plague after plague. Finally, the 10th time, Moses goes back to Pharaoh and he says, you need to let God's people go or else. And Pharaoh kind of puffs up his chest and he says, try me. And I think Moses might have said, okay, we're going to try God in this instance. And so what happens is the final straw, it's the 10th plague. The firstborn of every family member would be killed unless the family sacrificed a perfect lamb and painted the blood across the doorframe. This is what's known as Passover, and it's celebrated every year by the Jewish people. And there's a lot of detail that I just can't go into. Scott McNeil is actually going to be talking about Passover next week, but what happens is Pharaoh's firstborn son is killed. And he's had enough. He calls Moses over, says, hey, get him out of here. Take these people away. I'm sick and tired of being bullied and all these plagues, and you just took my son, and I need you to take God's people, and I need you to get out of here. Now, there's hundreds of years of backstory and history in like 4 minutes, so thank you for bearing with me. But that is where I want to pick up the story, because what happens is Moses gets God's people, he's leading them out into the wilderness, and Pharaoh gets this aha light bulb moment. He realizes, I've made a huge mistake. My free labor is waltzing away in the wilderness. What have I done? And so here's what happens in the story, starting in Exodus chapter 14, verse 5. This is what we read. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people. And they said, what is this we have done? There's the light bulb moment. We have let Israel go from serving us. So he made ready his chariot and took his army with him. He took 600 chosen chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the people of Israel while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. The Egyptians pursued them, and Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen and his army and overtook them. And encamped at the sea by Pi Hahiroth in front of Baal Zephon. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, is it because we have no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? And they're complaining to Moses, what have you done? You brought us out of Egypt. Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And so God's people are frustrated. God's people are upset, even though they were literally just freed from slavery, 430 years of slavery. They don't want to be slaves, but they don't want to be slaughtered either. And so if it's being slaughtered or being a slave, they're like, we would rather have stayed in Egypt. And in this moment, they're afraid. They're afraid of the unknown. They're afraid in the moment. They're afraid of the future. And they mock Moses. Did you bring us out here to die? What is wrong with you? But in this moment, I feel like God's people forgot who they were following. They forgot who was in control. They weren't looking to God in this moment. They weren't trusting in God the way that they needed to. They didn't realize he was going to provide a way like he always provides. And this is how Moses responds in Exodus 14, 13 and 14. Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent." You have only to be silent. That word silent can be translated a few ways. It means to be still. It means to be calm. It means, there's one translation that says, become deaf. Like literally do nothing, just become deaf. And my favorite definition is this: to not take an action in response. Do not take an action in response. So God's people are literally, they left Egypt and they're encamped in this place. And on one side is the Red Sea. They're kind of like on a beachfront. And on the other side is the Egyptian army coming to either kill them or take them back to be slaves. And God says, you don't have to take an action in response. You just have to sit there. You just have to be quiet. What you need to do is put your hope, faith, and trust in God, the God who moves, who always moves, because I'm going to provide for you, because I actually know the plan, even though you don't see the plan, even though you don't understand the plan. And can you imagine being the Israelites in that moment complaining, questioning God? God, do you really care? Because what it looks like is, it looks like you brought us out here to die. What are you doing? But I just want to let you know that God has already secured the victory. God sees and he knows the entire situation, how it will play out. God saw the Israelites' future, and he knows your future personally, and he knows our future as a church. And I'm going to continue to put my faith, hope, and trust in the God of the universe who provides a way, even when a way does not seem possible. Number one in your notes, God reminds Israel of their victory. And that teaches us to trust the God that holds our future. And God has been moving for 65 years in Cross City Christian Church. Is he going to stop today? No, he is not. God has used and blessed the people of Cross City Christian Church for 65 years. Do you think this is going to make him stop? No. And it's because God, who knows the future, that we can have peace, that we can be still, we can stay calm, and we can watch God do his thing. It is by faith that we can feel secure in our future, even though the future may feel uncertain. Romans 15, 13, it tells us this. It says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. It is because God knows and holds the future that we can be filled with hope, joy, and peace. And the hope, joy, and peace doesn't come from me. It doesn't come from our team. It doesn't come from our elders. Yes, we help, but it comes from God. It comes from the Holy Spirit. And because of that, we can be silent, we can be still, we can hold on to our peace, because God is in control and he is moving and he will provide a way. And I just think that he might be calling us into something greater than we can ever imagine. And here's what happens next in Exodus 14, 15 through 18. The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward." Tell them to go forward. Where are they supposed to go? The army's right here and the water is right here. Go forward. Lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And here's what God is going to do. "I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I, God, will get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts, his chariots and his horsemen, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. Number two, in your notes, God called Israel to move forward. And God is calling us to move forward. Maybe he's calling us to move forward in our own personal lives, but I believe God is calling us to move forward in the life of our church. And we can move forward because, number one, God tells us to. He says move forward, but he is fighting for us. And the victory has already been won. There's a Psalm 77, verses 13 through 20, and it kind of talks about this Exodus miracle. Here's what it says. It says, oh God, your ways are holy. Is there any God as mighty as you? You are the God of great wonders. You demonstrate your awesome power among the nations. By your strong arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. And he says, when the Red Sea saw you, oh God, its waters looked and trembled. The sea quaked to its very depths. The clouds poured down rain and the thunder rumbled in the sky. Your arrows of lightning flashed. Your thunder roared from the whirlwind. The lightning lit up the world and the earth trembled and shook. Check this out. Verse 19, your road led through the sea, your pathway through the mighty waters, a pathway no one knew was there. And you, God, you led your people along that road through the Red Sea on dry ground like a flock of sheep with Moses and Aaron as their shepherds. And so in the middle of everything that's going on, an army on one side, a body of water on another, God says, move forward. It doesn't make any sense, but are you going to trust that I'm going to provide a way when the way seems impossible? And so what happens is God's people move on dry ground, and the Egyptians kind of follow through, and they get kind of swallowed up by the sea. But in Exodus 15, as soon as they reach the other side of the body of water, here's what happens. They start praising God for providing, for conquering their fear, and for conquering their foe. God made a way when the way seemed impossible. When everything seemed crazy, when everything seemed chaotic in the midst of all the stuff that was going on, and they're crying out to Moses, you dummy, you brought us here to die. God, where are you? And God is like, man, all you have to do is trust in me and move forward. When everything doesn't make sense, trust in the one who makes the most sense. And here's part of the song that the Israelites start singing in Exodus chapter 15. Who among the gods is like you, Lord? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glory, working wonders? You stretch out your right hand and the earth swallows your enemies. In your unfailing love, you will lead the people you have redeemed. In your strength, you will guide them to your holy dwelling. In this moment, Exodus tells us that God received the glory when he made that way. Number three in our notes, God shows Israel his glory. And for us, the question is, how can we reflect God's glory in our lives? I think one of the things is we can remain faithful and trust that God is going to make a way. We can keep showing up to church. We can keep serving. And we can keep celebrating what God has done, what God is doing, and what God will do. He always provides a way, even when the way seems impossible, illogical, or impractical, because we follow and we serve a good God, a big God who knows the future, who has the plan. And I just ask and pray that we love and trust in God in this season. And it's through his love and grace and mercy and his strength, he is going to lead us and guide us. And at the end of the day, when we look back and say, man, God, you provided, you made something illogical make sense, it's only going to be because of him. Not because of me, not because of the people, but because of God and God alone. He gets the glory and he gets the credit. We are excited for the future. We are excited to see what God is going to continue to do. And we are excited to continue to partner with you, church. And right now, in a moment, like the Israelites did when they passed through the Red Sea on dry ground, and when they got to the other side, they just started praising God. They started celebrating his goodness for providing a way when it seemed impossible. So we're gonna have a few moments and we're gonna sing and praise the God of the universe who provides a way even when things seem a little uncertain, maybe a little hectic, maybe a little crazy. And maybe one of the ways that we can reflect God's glory today is actually by accepting his plan. Because God has a plan for each and every one of us. And when we accept it, man, that is just us accepting his love and his goodness. Accepting the fact that God sent his son to die for us because he always provides. And so maybe for you, you might just need to come to terms with that. You might need to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, and you can submit to him maybe for the first time if you've never made that decision. Or maybe you just feel like you're in the middle of something and you need to stop trying to plan everything out or stop rolling with the punches, and you just need to put your faith, hope, and trust in the God who provides. He wants to provide if you trust him. And church, I'm gonna trust him. I hope and pray that you will too. So if you need to make a decision for Christ, if you need to be baptized, if you need prayer, if you need help, if you need anything at all, there's gonna be a team of people down here in the front. But man, let's follow the example of the Israelites. When God said, move forward, let's move forward and let's stand and sing and celebrate the goodness of our Heavenly Father. Let's stand and let's sing.